Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Greg Pretty.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Your company had an honor this week, yes?
Oh, yeah. We were in the paper. Our CEO was in the paper.
Because?
Well, Dr. Fujita, our founder and president and CEO, got to sit in First Lady Michelle Obama's box at the State of the Union address on Tuesday night.
Well, I did watch, and I didn't see him.
No, he wasn't one of the success stories that the president singled out
right.
in his speech. That's who they were focusing
right.
on.
Right, I saw that.
It was a very nice honor. And
did he enjoy himself?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I haven't seen him yet. Because he canceled a trip to Asia.
I know.
To attend this. And I think right after he was done, he literally went from Washington
to Asia.
Off to the rest of the...
Still, how cool is that?
It really is.
Very cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, who knows? Maybe the president will return the favor and visit us one of these days over in Mayfield Village. Who knows?
That would be cool.
Yeah, it would be very cool.
Ooh, I want to be there. I don't work for your company, see if you can get me a special pass.
See what I can do, but I make no promises.
No, I would imagine not. So we're going to move on here. And more really kind of cool stuff. You know, sometimes the universe just opens up and things you thought were not possible fall into place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Our first guest this evening must have felt that way when Outside Magazine named his blog, Red Kite Prayer, the number one cycling blog in the U.S. Remember that?
Yes.
A few weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Brady, writer, editor, and publisher, has spent the better part of his adult life writing about bicycling, and people are listening. RKP, which is what the blog is known throughout cycledom, is a wealth of information about cycling. He divides the blog into mind, body, machine, which I thought was kind of interesting. And I'm very pleased that we're going to be able to talk with Patrick this evening. It took a while to get him on the show because once the Outside Magazine thing hit, he was inundated with hits and calls and, mm-hmm. you know, congratulations and all that. So things have settled down a little bit. Then we're going to head up to Portland and talk with Boaz Frankel, who is, ready, the pedal-powered talk show host.
Oh, yeah. I remember you were talking about this a few weeks back.
Well, when I found out about him, I sent him an email and I put in the subject line, from the sedentary talk show host. And then he sent me back a really quick response. His shtick is really terrific. He uses a specially designed cargo bike outfitted with a complete video and sound studio and brings his talk show to the guests.
Huh.
For instance, recently interviewed a popular band in the Portland area that had just returned from some successful road trip. He met them at a piano store and set up his little shop, his little studio, and did this terrific interview. And he seems to have just about as much fun, almost as we do. Maybe
cool.
not as much, but almost.
All right.
So we have some news. So let's get ready to bring Patrick Brady, the editor of Red Kite Prayer, to the Outspoken Cyclist. Good evening, Patrick. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Well, thanks for having me, Diane.
It is my pleasure. Let me be one of the ones to congratulate you on the Outside Magazine recognition naming RKP, the number one cycling blog. I know it's turned your world upside down.
You know, it's funny. I mean, on one hand, you know, normal day-to-day things haven't changed a lick. But on the other hand, when I go to Google Analytics and I look at the numbers, it's like, what? Really? What just happened?
Exactly.
It's pretty surreal. And it's been such a blessing to have the opportunity to really capitalize on that momentum and do some neat things for other people. One of the reasons I got into writing about cycling, I mean, really, if I'm honest, one of the people that I looked up to and respected for the quality of their work was John Wilcoxon.
Sure.
I was a loyal reader of VeloNews back in the 80s and 90s, and I can remember a particular edition of the Tour of Lombardy at the end of the season. I believe it was 91, if not certainly by 92, that had me thinking, yeah, I really can do this. This is something I really want to chase. I'd like to be doing work of that sort of quality. And so now to be presented with the opportunity to allow him a little more creative freedom, and certainly since everything went down with a competitor group and, you know, his layoff and all that,
sure.
To give him a chance to be able to do work on a more frequent basis, I'm just honored to have a chance like that.
I'm sure. So let's back up a little bit and tell us a little bit about your background and where you grew up and what brought you into journalism to begin with. I know this is always what you wanted to do. Pretty much.
Well, actually, I wanted to be a rock and roll star.
Well, yeah, we all wanted to be that, but barring that.
I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee. Was there more than 20 years, and really for my undergraduate work, a lot of my studies were in music. I was a percussionist, played drum set, played in rock and roll bands, and really thought that I was going to have a career in music. And then as I began writing music and exploring that stuff, I took a poetry workshop so that I could write better song lyrics, and poetry just kind of took over my world.
Huh.
And that led me to graduate work at UMass Amherst, where I started realizing, okay, I'm not going to get a job as a faculty at a good university, and I don't really want to teach high school or community college, so I need to think about something else. And at the same time, I was really into cycling and started thinking, you know, these bike magazines are damned cool. I wonder if you could, like, get a job working for a bike magazine. And I got really fortunate to meet Maurice Tierney of Dirt Rag, and he said he was looking for some people in New England to write for the magazine. And this is back when it was black and white and saddle-stitched, if you can believe that.
Oh, yeah, no, Dirt Rag at the beginning was really a cool, you know, sort of a handmade magazine.
Yeah,
it was beautiful.
It really was very zany in that regard. The first piece I did for him was about riding at Northfield Mountain, which was a cross-country ski area near where Richard Sacks is based these days,
right,
near Greenfield, Massachusetts. Let's just say the piece was forgettable. It was an inauspicious start. You know, there's nothing really there that we'll call collectible or otherwise. But, I kept getting just lucky introductions to people. Eventually, there was an introduction to Richard Fries. And before Richard was known as an advocate, a cycling advocate, and an announcer, he was publishing The Ride magazine. And I began contributing to The Ride with their second issue. Then he started throwing me bones and introduced me to the folks at Vela News, and I covered the old Killington stage race for them 1 year. I did cross nationals for them in 95. So I was doing little things here and there, and I moved to California to join the staff of a magazine that was started back in the 1980s, Bicycle Guide.
Right.
So I was with them for a couple of years. Until it was folded while I was on assignment in France. Always entertaining.
Yeah, hitchhike home.
Yeah, so, it was within 2 or 3 days of Bicycle Guide being folded that I had the idea to launch Asphalt. I'd seen some super premium publications for a year. I believe it was Axo, the motorcycle company, had gotten behind some renegade photographers and editors to do a thing called Inside Motocross, which was easily the first super premium I ever saw. And then I saw the Surfer's Journal and then the Rodder's Journal, and I was thinking, you know, with all these $5,000 bicycles, because in 98, an expensive bike was $5,000-$6,000.
Yes.
I was like, you know, all these people riding these $5,000 bicycles. I mean, there should be a nice, you know, high quality magazine to kind of reflect that experience.
Right.
And so that's when I started working on putting together Asphalt.
Which was stunning, by the way.
Well, thanks.
It was just a beautiful magazine.
Worked hard on it.
I know. So Asphalt didn't make it.
No, unfortunately not. There were some problems with my partner, and you know, my mom said if you can't say something nice, so I'll stop here.
Okay. But so at the same time, things started happening so that people started reading more online.
Yeah.
Blogging, you just seem to have fallen into the right place at the right time. And
it was a backdoor entry, if ever there was one.
Okay. How did that happen?
Well, there was a fella that I met. VeloNews was doing those Velo Swap events. And one year they had one in Chicago. And I went to that to promote Asphalt. I believe this was 2004. And as fate would have it, I met a guy who had been one of the people working at Seven Cycles when I used to deal with them a lot, you know, just calling Rob and interviewing him for stories, that sort of thing. There was this guy, Tony Bustamante, and he was at the VeloSwap event, and we got to talk, and I find out, oh, he was at Seven Cycles and whatnot, and it's like this reunion of brothers from different mothers, and we start comparing notes and whatnot, and so an instant friendship was there. And because he worked in sales, he introduced me to this guy, Radio Freddy, who started bugging me for entries for his new blog called Belgium Knee Warmers. Now, at that point in time, my understanding of a blog was that it was generally very personal stuff.
Right.
And so it was so personal as to be kind of codified.
So you had to know something to figure out what the heck they were talking about.
Yeah, it was so personal that it wasn't universal experience. And so it really didn't make sense to me. It took a little while to see what he was doing with his posts. For me to start to see an opportunity where, oh, you know, it doesn't have to be this crazy personal thing that I'm not interested in doing. And by the time this really got going, Asphalt was done, and I had this feeling that I wasn't really welcome in the bike industry. It's not something anyone had said or done to me, but I just felt badly because I'd been part of a business that failed. And so there was a certain degree of guilt I was carrying around.
Wait a minute. Stop. So you're saying you didn't feel like you were welcome in the bike industry because Asphalt failed?
Yeah. Hmm. I'm saying exactly that.
Interesting. Is that something you self-imposed, I hope?
Oh, entirely.
Okay.
Entirely. Nobody ever said a bad word to me except for a couple of readers. And I just said, you know, I'm sorry, this is something beyond my control.
Right. Of course. Let me take a second to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Patrick Brady, who is the successful editor of Red Kite Prayer, the number one cycling blog, according to Outside Magazine, right now in the world, I guess. Outside reaches everywhere.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you read in the English language, I guess that qualifies. It's amazing, though, to go on Google Analytics and see all the different countries where we have readers.
Yep, I know.
You know, it's nutty.
Tell us what Red Kite Prayer means.
Well, my desire to come up with that name or something like it really goes to my experience with blogging. I want something that when I post something to the blog, I want it to be fairly universal in experience, something that any reader can plug into, any passionate cyclist. Otherwise, there's not much point in it. And so when I was looking for a name for the blog, I was thinking about, well, what is it in the cycling experience that really speaks to me? And it occurred to me there had been a little joke among some friends of mine and I. I talked about that moment that happens in the final kilometer of a race where, you know, at some point, almost every single rider will look straight down at the road. They're not looking ahead, not looking to the side,
yep.
You know, and for reasons that are sort of unknown until you are in that moment,
right.
They're not you know, they're not looking in any way that's helpful to, you know, conducting the bicycle in a safe manner. But you can tell when they look down, there's a little flash of that, oh, my gosh, this is going to hurt. You know, just get me to the line, please.
Right.
And that really appeals to me. That's a moment that really resonates with me because it's a very human moment. You know, it's one filled with both ambition and weakness. And so that speaks to the entirety of the human condition. And so I just started calling it the Red Kite Prayer to Friends. And so when I started thinking I needed a name for a blog, I went back to that. And I think that kind of gives a sense of, you know, what our concerns are, looking at where cycling fits in our lives, why it matters to us, and how it can inform, you know, the rest of our lives.
Well, how did you decide on... So you've got this awesome name. By the way, I think it's an awesome name. How did you decide the format? You have this sort of mind-body-machine format, which is really interesting because it does incorporate that whole being, way of being, because the machine becomes part of you when you ride, allegedly. Well, hopefully.
Yeah. I had this sense that the posts that I was writing – you know, kind of fell along three distinct lines. You know, one was more about the real-world experience of riding the bicycle and those things that come up, whether it's about going out and doing an event or writing about what's going on with the pros and, you know, looking at race analysis or what's going on within teams. That kind of fit the body part. The mind were... the mind section was more about those more introspective posts, something that had become kind of my signature. And so I wanted something that really spoke in a very deliberate way to that. And then machine was because I still love writing about the gear of cycling.
Okay.
I really fundamentally believe that, you know, the right piece of new gear can make that experience fresh. I'm not one for conspicuous consumption. I don't need to show up on a ride with the latest, hottest piece of gear just to show off. It can be fun.
Right.
what I really like is how, you know, you get on a new piece of gear, especially if you get on a new bicycle. Suddenly, you're 8 years old. You know, you're in your cul-de-sac in front of the house you grew up in. And you're remembering those first unsteady pedal strokes. Suddenly, you've opened up your whole world to this brand new experience, and it's a freedom that, you know, we ought only to have gotten once in our lives. But I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, you get on something new and exciting, and you get a taste of that once again. And I think that's a really valid experience.
Oh, I agree. Totally agree.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why, even though I've got a lot of contemporaries, guys who were writing about cycling when I first started out, who've long since stopped doing any sort of gear reviews, it's one of those things that I continue to be interested in. And I continue to be fascinated with the work that, you know, the best frame builders and best engineers are doing. These are my peeps. I can't do with my hands what somebody like Peter Weigel can do with a torch.
Right.
That's not my medium. I have to work with Microsoft Word and typing.
But can certainly appreciate what Peter Weigel does.
You know, I just
and
I
talk
love
about
those
it.
Guys.
Sure. Yeah. Me too. Me too.
And very, I get just cool. as much fun talking to, you know, say the engineers at Specialized or one of the other big bike companies, the guys down at Felt. They're just unbelievable. I can listen to those guys all day long because the work they do and the insight they have to what makes the bicycling experience exciting. It's just fascinating to me.
Well, when you do these product reviews, are people sending you product?
Yes. I've been really fortunate that when I first started doing this stuff once again, there were some relationships from, you know, my asphalt and bicycle guide days where people were happy to have me doing some stuff.
Okay.
That blog that I was contributing to before Red Kite Prayer, Belgium Knee Warmers.
Right.
It started with us just writing about stuff that we thought was cool. They were things we were already using, had already purchased, and we do little reviews of things here and there just because we were having fun. And then some people reached out to me and said, well, would you be interested in saying something about X? And so it's gotten to the point now that, you know, we're being sought out to do reviews of certain things. And that it's one of the funniest things about the readership of RKP is I've got readers who only come for the gear reviews.
Sure,
and
they do.
Other readers who, if we stopped doing gear reviews tomorrow, would actually be happier.
And hopefully that is one of the beauties of having your mind-body machine is that you can attract all those different wants and needs. So that's a good thing. So they won't read a gear review. Who cares? You know, they're reading something else that they really like, which brings me to sort of a loaded question about advertising. And part of this is just a sort of a curiosity question on my side, and that is, so do product reviews have any bearing on people coming to you and saying, I want to advertise on your site? I know that's one of those weird questions, but what can I say?
Well, it's not a weird question at all. It's a really important question to ask. It's something that everyone should have some clue about how a publisher handles. You deserve, as a reader, to know just what the relationship is between editorial and advertising. It's fair to explain that to the reader. It's fair for the reader to ask. Anyway, to answer the question, there's always, in enthusiast publications, there's always some amount of relationship between the two. It's not like, say, a really great magazine like Vanity Fair or The New Yorker, where maybe they're doing an historical retrospective of Ollie North and his many misdeeds or something crazy like that, and then getting advertising from GM, where there's no relationship between what GM's interest is and what that subject matter is.
Right.
But because cycling is a pretty small world, if I'm talking about gear, you know, then there's an interest on the part of the gear makers to be a part of this and to reach my readers. So it's very hand in glove.
Okay. So, well, so this relationship between you and the advertiser, it's not like I will advertise on your site if you give me a good review. See,
right.
Okay. And that's really what I think people think. When I wrote for one of the trade journals, it was called Bicycle Dealer Showcase in the Day. I actually wrote an article about that, and I got only one magazine to admit that that was something that they actually looked at.
I was really fortunate. When I joined Bicycle Guy, the editor there was Garrett Lai. And there are a number of things that Garrett imparted to me that are still part of my standard operating practice to this day. One of the things he told me was, we don't make any promises save one. And that promise is, I can promise you, if you don't send it to me, we won't review it. And so that was partly a shot across the bow of some of the other magazines that were operating at the time, who would do gear reviews based on a press release and a photo.
Okay, got it.
And so we would, we had a section of the magazine that we started where when we got a press release and a photo, on occasion we would, you know, just toss it in this one section. It was just kind of a heads up, you know, here's something you might be interested in. We haven't tested this. We don't know anything about it, but it's kind of curious. Check it out. Back to your bigger question of the relationship between editorial and advertising, I still maintain that today. I'm not going to review anything that I haven't actually been sent to ride.
Okay.
And I tend to take my time with that stuff. The other part of this question is, you know, the thing that has come up on a couple of occasions is, if I advertise with you, will that ensure that I get a good review? And the answer there is no. Generally, my practice is that if I really don't like something, if I think maybe the product's just not ready for prime time, or it just didn't work for me at all, I'll just pass on doing the review and just be straight up with them and say, I don't think this is a really good idea. There was an occasion last spring, I think it was spring or summer, where there was some criticism in the comments section of RKP that I like everything I review. And I think the word curated gets overused or maybe reached too far. But to a certain degree, we do curate what we review. I've kind of vetted things beforehand. So by the time I'm actually in the process of writing something for a review, it's something that I've determined I'm interested in. I find this pretty exciting. I want to ride it. Versus, you know, just having UPS show up at the doorstep with a pile of stuff that I may or may not be interested in. And so that's kind of a separate problem. But to address the issue of, oh, RKP loves everything that they review, I kind of posed the question of, you know, well, who's served by the bad review?
And that's a very good point.
I wrote an entire post kind of examining that question. You know, what success comes from writing that post? The upshot was that people were like, well, let's see what a bad review would look like. And I was like, oh, man. So
open that door. Somebody stepped through it.
Yeah, I took the top off that can of worms. And I reviewed a bike that I had previously determined that I wasn't going to review.
How did that work out?
Well, the second comment to that post was best effing bike review, and he used the real thing.
Of course he did.
I've ever read, which was precisely not the reaction I was looking for.
Yeah, of course not. Of course not.
But it was really interesting because some of the more articulate, not that he was inarticulate, but some of the more introspective comments that I got in response to that post were about what they learned about what goes into a good bike, the things to consider, you know, in looking at bikes and shopping for them, you know, what may or may not work for somebody. And so it was kind of a fresh perspective on all that, you know, a third wall to the building, if you will.
Sure.
The one thing I took away from that is, okay, maybe I can just, you know, put this back in the box now. I've been there. I've done that. Maybe I won't need to do this again. Talk to me in 6 months, though.
So, unfortunately, we're coming to the end of the time we can talk today, although I really want to know more about RKP and about what you're doing going forward. So I know a lot has happened. What are your plans going forward? What do you think will be sort of the next level for Red Kite Prayer?
Really, my plans for the next 6-7 months and on to a year will be kind of business as usual.
Good.
What RKP was 6 months ago was really just two guys. Robot, who he's not been known as an industry guy, so he just goes by a pseudonym. And then myself. There were occasional other freelance pieces here and there. But, you know, we picked up Charles Pelkey, and that kind of started a certain sort of momentum, got this snowball rolling down the hill. And out of that, I had the opportunity to join forces with Whit Yost, formerly of Pave,
right,
and his number one contributor, Jeremy Rausch. And then I teamed up with Brad Rowe at Peloton to be able to offer enough work to John Wilcox and to essentially give him, you know, what is essentially full-time employment. Most of the work that John does is for Peloton. There's a piece in the magazine plus his weekly column online, and then he's doing a weekly piece for me. So that's four people who were pretty much contributing on a weekly schedule, whereas before it was just two guys, 5 days a week. We're now solidly, you know, six guys, 6 days a week. We'll be probably 7 days a week pretty soon. you know, once the publishing schedule kind of evens out a little. So really, my near-term goal is just to get that smoothed out. We've got a lot of advertising that we need to sell so that we can pay everyone truly professional rates. And that's a big deal to me, is showing everyone that, you know, you're doing professional work and I'm going to pay you professionally for it. That's not really happening at other blogs.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Nothing against them.
No, of course not. But you're bringing your business sense as well as your professional sense to it. And I think it's just something to salute. I am really impressed with it. I think it's very exciting. And it gives us all hope.
Well, thanks. It really just comes down to my sense of conscience. You know, these are talented guys. They deserve to have a chance to write and, you know, share their insights about cycling with an appreciative audience. And I'm just not – my parents raised me in a way that won't permit me to just kind of use people like that. No, I've got to see to it that they're getting something fair out of this deal. Otherwise, I can't sleep at night.
Well, I think your readers are also getting something fair. And I think that you've really taken this whole blogging thing professionally, and I think it's awesome. And I really thank you for joining me this evening. I wish we had more time, but we don't. So I'm going to leave the door open for you to come back.
Yeah, and, I'd be happy to.
And thank you, Patrick Brady, for spending your time with the Outspoken Cyclist this evening.
Oh, thank you, Diane. This has been a lot of fun.
Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Patrick Brady, one of the new superstars in the bicycle press in the United States, joined us from Redondo Beach, California.
Editor of Red Kite Prayer. That's just really one of the guys who is so deserving of this success, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
He has stuck with it, and has obviously he's just a mensch, as we say.
All right.
All right.
Very cool. Very cool. Nice to hear his perspective on a lot of different subjects.
Yes.
And so glad that he could join us. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we're going to do some news, and then we're going to go voice to voice, one bicycling show host to another with a guest from out in Portland, Oregon. So stay tuned for all of that right after this on The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
It's that time of year again. WJCU's Radiothon 2012 kicks off on the weekend of February 12th and runs through February 19th with special concerts, studio guests, and premiums as we ask you, our listeners, to step up and pledge your support for quality local radio served up fresh every day with no commercial ingredients. So get ready for Radiothon 2012 at WJCU.
I'm Greg Pretty.
And I'm Diane Lees.
And we are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. Time for our weekly installment of cycling news.
Yes, indeed. We are going to begin our news this week with one of my least favorite type of reports, recalls. Giant Bicycles is recalling the 2012. This is a brand new bike. It's called the Defy Advanced 0, 1, and 2, as well as the women's model, Avail Advanced 0, 1, and 2. All use a fork that can crack, causing a fall hazard. Approximately 900 units are affected of varying colors and sizes. So far, no injuries have been reported. The bikes were sold nationwide by Giant Bicycle dealers from August 2011 through November 2011. If you have a 2012 Giant Avail, go back to your dealer. Make sure your bike is not part of the recall. Recall number two. Washington, D.C., this comes from Brain, bicycle retailer. Three importers are working with the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission and Health Canada to recall about 2,000 Nitto aluminum handlebars that can break. The B259AA bars were sold from January 2008 through July 2011 for between $60 and $80. Two incidents in which the bars have broken have been reported. One of the incidents involved a fall and a cut to the rider's leg. They were sold in the following colors: red, blue, black, gold, green, pink, and silver. Nitto and B259 are printed at the end of the handlebars. Consumers should immediately stop using the recalled bars and contact EuroAsia Imports to receive a free replacement handlebar. For additional information, contact EuroAsia at 888-662-1814 between 8 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday, or use the firm's website, which is EuroAsiaImports.com. I hate reporting on that stuff, but I think it's important that we do. So let's move on.
All right.
I love tongue-in-cheek, smart-aleck reporting. This week, John Nugent, who owns Nuvation Wheels. Now, I'm not saying the wheels are good or bad, just he's the owner of Nuvation Wheels, and he wrote a guest blog for Bicycle Retailer. And here's an excerpt. I'll give you the URL at the end. It's titled "The Placebo Effect." Greg's already smiling. It begins, "A normal part of medical testing is to include a placebo, something that is known to have no effect, blindly mixed in with the drug being tested. Testing has shown that placebos can work 30 to 90% of the time." Mm-hmm. Yes. So realizing the business potential for the placebo effect, Nuvation is soon going to be introducing an amazing new bearing that will actually make you go faster. Now, remember, tongue is in cheek here.
Okay.
It does this by storing energy. Most bearings are uniform in construction. That is, they use one material for the entire thing. Imagine a bearing that was denser on the outside so that it actually developed more momentum than a standard bearing. Somebody's been smoking something here. It would store and use this momentum at any point you weren't pedaling. In addition, the outside of the bearing would actually be slightly dimpled. Tests have proven that golf balls go further because of their dimples. We will be using the same type of aerodynamic technology to improve the internal aerodynamics of bearings. It's getting better. Preliminary tests in blind studies against standard bearings have shown that over 40% of riders actually felt as though they were going faster with the new bearings.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. They will be available in both standard chrome steel and ceramic versions. As an added feature, we have come up with a new patent-pending system for bearing sizing that will allow us to introduce a one-size-fits-all bearing, the first of its kind. So, you know,
well,
what can I tell you?
Cyclists.
It goes on and on and on. It's hilarious.
We can be some of the most neurotic people when
you
we
think?
Want to. Yes.
You think?
And I think we're very we're at least as susceptible to the power of suggestion as anybody. And
I think the word's
more so.
Gullible.
That's true. You know, if it's made of carbon,
it must be great.
It must be better, yeah.
And it's lighter, and it's the whole weight weenie thing.
Yeah.
Well,
if it weighs less, and if it's more aero,
mm-hmm.
It obviously gives us an advantage.
You left one out.
What's that?
And it costs more.
Well, that's true too.
This is from the Daily Camera in Boulder, Colorado, and it's very nice. It is a business-related article by Heath Urey, who's a camera staff writer. Boulder's bicycle-related businesses generated $52 million in sales and employed 330 full-time personnel in 2010, according to a new survey conducted by Community Cycles. Community Cycles is a local nonprofit that educates and advocates for the safe use of bicycles, and they sent surveys to 41 businesses in 2011. Using responses from 24 companies and estimates for the rest, Community Cycles found that bike-related retail, rental, and repair shops supported 214 jobs and generated more than $24.4 million in revenue, while manufacturing supported 13 jobs and generated $10.4 million in sales. Education and advocacy organizations supported 48 jobs, generated $7.9 million in revenue, and miscellaneous groups supported 55 jobs, generating another $9.5 million.
Wow. You know what they say, a million here, a million there. Soon you're talking real money.
That's true. I hadn't heard that in a long time. It's still funny.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Bicycle Times in Pittsburgh. Remember our friend Karen Brooks, who's the editor?
Yeah.
Guess what? She topped all staff members in 2011 in their bike to work miles. It was published this week. Karen logged 93.5 days and 2,338 commuter miles. Her next closest competitor, Eric, who Karen said would probably have won, except he often forgets to log his miles on the record board, cycled 88.5 days for 1,239 miles. That's like 1,100 miles less.
Mm-hmm.
In all, the staff accumulated 363.5 days and 6,687 miles. And according to the writer, Sharon Momani, she said, I'm confident that a lot of days were left unaccounted for because we were so involved in producing quality magazines and drinking coffee and beer that we forgot to keep track. Ba-dum-bum. And what's really cool is each commuter is reimbursed a dollar for every round trip cycled.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. What else is going on here? There's a really interesting article from our friend Dr. Gabe Merkin this week, drmerkin.com. Mm-hmm. He talks about fasting and if it's good for athletes. Now, I believe that fasting is good for overall health, but you can't fast and be a competitive athlete at the same time.
Sure.
And he goes on to explain lack of sugar, limits speed, muscles can still fill with sugar during fasting, how to eat to compete. It's a really nice article if you would like to learn a little more about how fasting and sugar and the whole thing of endocrinology and metabolism works. It's a very easy to read article. He makes it like lay
understandable.
Exactly. Right. This came up this week. I thought this was interesting. Volkswagen announced a 2-year partnership with People for Bikes and Bikes Belong.
Yeah.
Posted on January 26th, People for Bikes is taking a major step forward. Leading auto company Volkswagen of America announced its sponsorship of peopleforbikes.org and Bikes Belong Foundation. VW will donate significant funding to support key initiatives to improve bicycling in the U.S., including the People for Bikes movement and the Safe Routes to School National Partnership. So I thought that was nice. A car company, you know, supporting bicycling.
Volkswagen has a pretty good track record over the years of being.
True.
Yeah, because they partnered with Trek.
Right.
Back in the, '90s. They had the Trek Jetta.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. 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 That's true.
You bought a car and you got a.
You got a Jetta.
Free bike.
You got a Trek. Yep. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, we thought that nothing was going to happen with the transportation bill till March.
Right.
Wrong. So on Thursday, February 2nd, they expect that the House Transportation Committee will vote on the American Energy and Infrastructure Jobs Act and that that bill eliminates crucial funding for biking and walking. So if you are interested.
So bikeleague.org is the place to go to find out all about that and
what
you might do to voice your opinion if you are so inclined.
Yeah, they have a thing. Take action, I think it is, a button called Take Action.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The last item came right as I was racing out the door tonight. It is not a pretty one. It comes out of MSNBC.com. A 65-year-old man who was knocked off his bicycle by 3 teenagers on a Pennsylvania trail shot 2 of them, killing 1. The Reading Eagle newspaper said the wounded teen, 16, was taken to hospital. The third, age 15, was taken in for questioning and was later sent to a youth center. The incident happened on the Thune Trail near a bridge over the Schuylkill River between Reading and West Reading around noon Wednesday, this past Wednesday, according to WGAL.com. Police said the boys knocked the man off his bicycle in an apparent robbery attempt. There was one juvenile who was shot and is deceased. The other juvenile was shot and is in surgery, said the police chief. According to police, the 65-year-old man was riding his bicycle when the teens knocked him to the ground. Police said 2 teens then assaulted the man, who drew his gun and shot them. The man was released by police after they consulted with the district attorney, John Adams, late Wednesday, WFMZ reported. You know, yeah, I don't know about carrying a gun on a bicycle, but I also don't know about 3 teenagers ambushing somebody and knocking them off his bike. That's pretty sad, don't you think?
The whole thing is definitely sad.
It is.
And but I guess, you know, the moral of the story is don't necessarily think that a cyclist is unarmed just because they're not in a car or, you know.
Right.
They may be indeed carrying a deadly weapon. And
well, don't. Knock people off their bikes and try to hurt them either and steal their bikes. What the heck is that all about? We're moving on.
Crime happens.
Crime happens. Well, let's move on and let's go to a lighter note here.
Okay.
And we're going to welcome the pedal-powered talk show host to the show. Hello, Boaz. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, from one talk show host to another.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So I've been kind of reading your website and found out you're one interesting guy. Tell us tell us a little bit about yourself and how you have become the pedal-powered talk show host.
Well, I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and was always sort of into TV and video production, and I worked in entertainment journalism for a while on a few different things, and then I did this project called the On Road Trip, where I zigzagged across America using everything except a car. So I covered over 12,000 miles and 101 modes of transportation, from camel to kayak to motorized cooler to paraglider to couch bike and a bunch of other things. And also, I'm a kazoo enthusiast. I play in a jug band. I curate a kazoo museum. And now I'm working on the Pedal Powered Talk Show.
You are funny. You are hilarious. So, okay, I'm going to ask a question I don't usually ask. How old are you?
I am 29.
I was going to say, because you look really young when I watched the video this week, and I'm thinking, you're telling me you've done all these things. You've done more stuff at the age of 29 than most people have done their whole lives.
Oh.
So what gave
well, thanks.
You,
I appreciate that.
What gave you the idea to do the Pedal Powered Talk Show? And then we'll talk a little bit about what it is, really.
Yeah, sure. Well, it was really while I was on my on-road trip, which was this car-free journey across the U.S., and it was sort of a funny thing because I'd get to a new location, and then the local news truck would come out, you know, to interview me and do a segment, and that felt so weird that I was doing this car-free trip, and then all these news trucks were driving out to me, so I was sort of encouraging all this driving, and it got me thinking, you know, well, I wonder how I could put a TV production into something other than a car. And when I got back to town, I was talking with Bill Ross, who's one of the guys over at Metro Feats, who built the Pedal Power Talk Show, and
right.
He builds cargo bikes, and I'd ridden in one of his cargo bikes during my trip, and we started talking, and next thing you know, we sort of came up with this idea to build this talk show desk and sort of a TV production into a cargo bicycle.
So when you see the opening of your show on the video, there's somebody, you're pedaling, that's you pedaling.
Oh, no, that's I'm in the bike.
Oh, you are in the bike. Who's pedaling?
That's Bill Ross.
Okay, so I had it backwards. Okay, so does he go with you to all of your interviews?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he works on the show as well, and he bikes the talk show around. He keeps it in the Metro Feats workshop, and so he rides to every location, which sometimes can be a little trying, especially when we have more than one shoot in one day. He's been known to pedal pretty far in the rain and up some steep hills in a short period of time.
So how long have you been doing this?
Well, I think first started talking about it probably last spring, and then this summer we started getting the funding together for it, and we started taping episodes in November.
So how many episodes are there?
So far there are 4 episodes up, and there are 2 more that we filmed already. We're yet to release, and then we're figuring out sort of funding to get some more episodes going.
So let's talk just for a minute about the bike, since this is a cycling show. So the bike is a cargo bike. It's built by Metro Fiats in Portland. And when you see it, you pull up to your location. And is all that recording and video stuff inside the bike?
It can be. It's not always. It depends, because we've been renting some equipment. So
okay.
Sometimes a crew member brings it. It would be possible, but we don't always do it just because we don't own our own equipment right now.
So who is funding this? Am I allowed to ask that? Yes, I am.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a secret government project.
Got it. Oh.
No, I wish.
It's, Area 51.
We've got a few local companies here in Portland, Oregon, who've been super generous and thought it was a fun idea and wanted to come aboard for the ride. But one of them is Cane Footwear, and they were people I'd worked with during the on-road trip. And literally, I was just meeting with one of the guys over there, you know, he's saying, what are you up to? And I was like, well, I sort of want to build this bike. It's a little crazy. And they're like, okay, well, how much does it cost? And it was as simple as that. And then we also got Stephen Smith Tea Maker. It's this local tea company from the guy who also started Tazo Tea and Stash Tea, and then Nutcase Helmets, which I'm sure you're familiar with. They're based in Portland. And the guys over there, Michael Murrow, was a fan of the show, and we started talking about it and helped fund it.
I kind of know all three of those. We actually carry Keen in our store, and I know about the tea company. And I met the Nutcase guys when I was at the Heartland Velo show. So, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I know all of those guys. So how much does this Metro Fiat's cargo pedal-powered talk show host bike weigh?
It weighs, without anything in it, I think around like 80 pounds.
Yeah.
And then when it's packed up with equipment, it is, oh gosh, 130, 140 pounds.
Wow. No wonder you need a big guy to pedal that guy around, huh?
Yeah, feels pretty serious.
Yeah. So how are you choosing your topics to do these shows? Because they're not necessarily on cycling. The last one I saw was a band.
Right. Yeah, they're not really related to cycling, you know, and I think part of it for me is the idea is cycling sort of, you know, should be a part of your, you know, daily life every day. And really it's the show's not about cycling, but it sort of shows how it can really sort of be a part of everything. So in terms of guests, we're just looking for cool, notable Portlanders at this point, you know, sort of people who folks have heard of because they haven't heard of us yet. So, you know, hopefully we can say, well, you haven't heard of the Pedal Power Talk Show, but you like the band Blitz and Trapper. So check us out.
Ah, I see. That's pretty cool. So are people coming to you now and asking to be interviewed?
You know, it's funny, just in the past few days, especially after this one with Blitz and Trapper, a number of other bands suddenly started emailing and were like, hey, we love that episode. We really want to be on.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it's just starting to happen, which is really neat, you know, and fun that other people want to get on board. Now we just have to get a little more funding so we can pay our cameramen.
So are other sponsors starting to look at it because it's growing? You know, it's that chicken or egg thing or whatever.
It's definitely sponsorship. It's always tricky to get, you know, sponsors, especially when you don't know these people. So, yeah, a lot of people are interested, but, you know, being interested is one thing and actually, you know, writing a check is another. So we are definitely looking for other sponsors and other folks who like the idea and want to get involved.
What do you have on tap for some of your future shows? Do you already have some lined up that you're going to be doing?
Yeah, we have actually Stephen Smith of Stephen Smith Tea Maker is going to be in the next episode. We sat down with him inside a tea factory. And additionally, we talked to Craig Thompson, who's this really cool graphic novelist who wrote Blankets, which I think was a best-selling graphic novel, and then Habibi this year, which was sort of all over the place. He just got back from a European tour. And then we're actually going to be doing a live show in March here in Portland with, like, a live audience. We won't broadcast it live, but we'll film it with a live audience. And we're still lining up our guests for that show. But, yeah, that should be really fun, and it'll be cool to have, you know, a live audience around and have that energy in the room.
Have you thought about branching into other areas beside Portland? I don't know how you'd transport yourself, you know, to other cities or states. But have you thought about expanding the concept? It's so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, honestly, I would love to take a cross-country trip in this thing. I think maybe we'll put in an electric assist before we do that.
Yeah, I would
think so. To make it a little easier. But yeah, I would love to do that. And we were talking about, well, what if we just, you know, trucked it to New York for a few episodes and shot, you know, a week of episodes in New York or something like that. So we would love to do that. You know, if someone is listening and wants to fly us all to Denmark with a bike, to shoot a week of episodes, heck, we're ready. Sign us up.
Well, you know, you're always welcome in Cleveland.
Man, I would love to do it.
I mean, we have
Cleveland. I think that'd be a blast.
We have the Rock Hall. We've got some cool stuff here. We have a world We have a world famous orchestra. I think it would be fun to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been to Cleveland and enjoyed my time there. So I'd definitely go back with a Pedal Power Talk Show.
Obviously, you do not own a car, or do you?
No, I don't own a car.
Okay.
I've never owned a car. Now I actually own a scooter, which I got this year.
Oh, cool. So are you involved in other bicycling things besides the Pedal Power Talk Show? Do you get involved in advocacy at all? I know Portland's such a huge bicycle town.
Yeah, definitely. I am sort of peripherally involved in some things, you know, especially when I was doing the on-road trip.
Right.
Project when I was riding and often biking around cities, I met up with a lot of bike advocacy groups around the country, you know, and talked to a lot of politicians about that, mayors and city council members. I was definitely involved in that. Now, I'm just sort of a bicycle enthusiast and rider, and I'm not, you know, particularly, you know, involved with any organizations other than, I guess, casually supporting them.
So do you like being a talk show host?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody always sort of said, but I just ask too many questions. You know, I'm just sort of curious. You know, as soon as I meet somebody, like, oh, where are you from? How long have you been here? Like, oh, do you like that? Like, well, what's the best part about this? Tell me about your family. And so, so for me, it seems really natural. And I just, so it's fun to have this sort of forum where I can ask all these questions and it's not weird.
So here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can watch the Pedal Powered Talk Show episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they can head over to pedaltalkshow.com, pedaltalkshow.com, and they can watch them all there. They can friend us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and we post episodes. We've been posting them every Tuesday. They can go on there and watch more episodes now. We've been releasing other extra little video tidbits they can watch too, and we blog and take some great photos. This buddy of mine, Daniel Stark, takes really awesome photos of all the behind-the-scenes stuff, which is fun too, to sort of see how we put it all together and make a TV show out of a bicycle.
Well, this has been just so much fun learning about another talk show host.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying
it. Figure out a way to collaborate once we get, you know, some more sponsors. Maybe we can meet in the middle and do a live show together.
That would be so much fun. Well, Boaz Frankel, who is the Pedal Powered Talk Show host out of Portland, Oregon, thank you so much for joining me this evening on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Diane. This is a lot of fun.
And I will be watching for your new episodes.
Sounds good. I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
Cool. Thanks. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Boaz Frankel joined us from Portland, Oregon. He's the pedal-powered talk show host. And I'd have a guest on by the name of Boaz Frankel. I mean, that's just an interesting name.
He's just and very cool. You've got to see these videos. They're really, really well done.
I'll check that out.
They're cool.
I'll check that out.
Yeah.
So, all right. We're about to head out of here. See what the weather outside is doing this 5 minutes here in Northeast Ohio. It hasn't seemed to be winter yet. And
keep your fingers crossed.
Time's running out.
I hope so. I hope you're right.
And speaking of time running out, yes, it's only 7.5 weeks to the spring equinox.
Yes.
There are 14 weeks to train for Calvin's 12-hour challenge, 15 weeks to Tazrev, and 22 weeks to the start of the Tour de France 2012. So just a little less than 6 months to the tour.
Time's a-flying.
Yes, it is.
It is indeed.
Yeah, season will be here for real before you know it. So.
And you didn't say how many weeks it was till Radiothon.
Oh, I don't know the number of weeks, but mid-February Radiothon.
That would be about 3 weeks,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, we take that one opportunity every year to ask you for a bit of money to support WJCU, and this year our goal is to have enough money raised to completely rehabilitate our main production studio, which would be actually a direct benefit to the Outspoken Cyclist, because we produce this show in a different studio that doesn't have Skype.
And we are needing Skype for several of our upcoming guests from overseas, especially.
Yep. So, anyway, that the more details about that coming up, but we hope you'll mark your calendar and give us a little or a lot of your cash coming up for Radiothon 2012 in mid-February for WJCU.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Time to head out of here. Wish you a safe and pleasant week, and come back and see us next week for another edition of The Outspoken Cyclist.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.